There was an idea.
Stark knows this.
Called the Avengers Initiative. The idea was to bring together a group of remarkable people. See if they could become something more. See if they could work together when we needed them to fight the battles that we never could. Phil Coulson died still believing in that idea. In heroes. Well, it's an old-fashioned notion.
Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, there's only one thing on our minds, Avengers Endgame. It's time to dive into this beast, spoilers hot. Oh, snap! Yeah, I did that. All right, my name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
I'm so excited.
And you just can't hide it. All right, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello. Also, I'm pretty sure that Oh Snap is how the beginning of a Fergie song starts.
Well, I was tying it into Chris Hemsworth and Men in Black International's trailer.
Yeah, there you go.
So there you go. You're welcome, Hemsworth, or Chubby Thor, whatever you want to go with. I'm just going to warn you ahead of the game, right off the bat. Spoilers are here. So if you haven't seen Endgame or you're worried about what happens in Endgame, I would recommend you turn this off. Come back to it later. Or listen to the whole thing and just ruin it for yourself. I don't care. It'll save you $10.
Right. You know, speaking of the things that got spoiled for us, is there anything that you guys got spoiled on before going to this?
Not a single thing.
Not a single thing?
I was pretty good about not watching any trailers. I'm curious now to go back and watch them and see how they turned out, like if they did spoil anything in the trailers.
Not at all. I went and watched. Really? Yeah, not at all.
But the internet was nice.
I only watched the first trailer. That's the only one I watched. And I tried to avoid every single article that had anything to do with this. And then Wednesday night, or maybe it was Thursday night, I'm just scrolling through Facebook real quick. And somebody in my feed puts up that his favorite thing was Fat Thor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's all he said was, my favorite thing was Fat Thor. That's all I have to say. And to his credit, that's all he did say in his post. However, like when I saw that, I was like, no way. They didn't put Fat Thor in the movie. Did they? Please tell me this guy didn't just do that. Mm-hmm. Like of all the work I put into avoiding stuff, and he puts it right there in Front Street.
The question now is, are you still friends on Facebook?
I mean, I don't really call most of my Facebook friends actual friends.
Right? Why don't we? Seriously, I don't.
Well, I did say, are you still friends on Facebook?
I'm not friends with 500 and some people or whatever. And I could have a lot more, but I just don't feel like going through all the requests. It's just a pain in the ass, man. So, no, they're like handfuls of those are real. All the ones listening are real friends if you're on there. But outside of that.
I'm just always like, not today, ISIS. Not today, ISIS. Not today, ISIS.
Did you hear that there's a guy in Hong Kong who was shouting spoilers outside the theater and got his ass whooped?
Oh, there was also...
Yeah, that happened.
There was also a lady who was so overwhelmed by the end of the movie that she was hyperventilating. She had to go to the hospital, the emergency room. Like, she couldn't breathe. There was a lot of hysteria there.
So you just, like, cut off my story, which was actually focused on the topic we were talking about, and jumped to the end of the movie.
Well, I'm just telling you that there's...
It's like you don't care what I speak.
I do. I'm just telling you there's a related story. People that are wasn't going crazy everywhere.
That wasn't related. That's not a spoiler-related story.
She was in China.
it's nearby. It counts.
You know what? She couldn't take America's ass in it.
Oh, I could take it. Let me tell you.
Let me tell you something. I agree. That is America's ass.
I think we can all agree.
We can all concur because I was noticing that before we got...
Heck yeah.
As a straight man, there's moments where I was... I definitely feel like they zoomed in on his ass for a reason. And I was in awe of it. Like, wow, that's a badonkadonk right there.
He was
like,
shaving and he was standing at the mirror. And this is the very beginning of the movie. And he's just standing there. And I'm like, wow, Evans has been doing his leg work.
I'm pretty sure it's been like that for a long time.
I mean, it has, but
the camera just
noticed.
Didn't zoom in on it before. And in 3D, that thing just pops out at you.
Yeah.
You know, if a lot more people would be going to 3D if that were the case.
That's true. And maybe I'm not so straight because I was looking at it quite a bit.
How do you look away?
It follows you wherever you go. It's like looking at one of those paintings. I'm like, look at it. The ass is coming around. There it is.
It's like the portrait of Abe Lincoln.
I don't know what that means, but let's get into Avengers Endgame. All right, let's talk about the build-up to this. Endgame is essentially the culmination of over 20 previous films, plus the sequel to last year's feel-good movie of the year, Infinity War. What do you think of Marvel's achievement here? Not meaning the movie, just kind of putting this all together to get to this point.
It's kind of amazing because if you really think about what they did is they took some characters that nobody really wanted. Nobody really wanted Iron Man because he wasn't as popular back when this was getting started.
Yeah,
as,
people forget that. Yeah.
Yeah. Captain America also wasn't really that popular of a character. So they took a lot of these characters that people had been a little tired of, a little bit over with, and they found a way to revitalize them in a brand new way and introduce a whole new world with these characters. And boom, we suddenly have Iron Man, Captain America, all these characters that just people were not that interested in, and they are the biggest characters out there. And that right there in and itself is an achievement.
Well, and just to think about the amount of detail required for all of these movies to come together and feed into one to the next, to the next, to the next, until we build up to this final film, I think was an incredible accomplishment for them and takes a lot of work for you to remember. You have to avoid any continuity issues and make sure that everything is still standing straight after 22 movies. And they managed to do that pretty effectively.
I've had several moments throughout this series. I mean, I personally I have a hard time calling it a series of films when they're all over the place and they're different characters and stuff. But this is a culmination of all those movies, so I'll call it that for the sake of this podcast, okay? A series. Throughout the entirety of them building up to this movie, it's been something of an amazement to me. Iron Man, like John said, is a character people barely knew. I mean, people will shout now that, oh, yeah, Iron Man's always been my favorite. Whatever. No. He was never, like, the biggest. Spider-Man has always been, for the longest time, has been the biggest Marvel character up until recent years. Robert Downey Jr. made that character, built that whole world. And then you've got Captain America, who I personally love the character, but to a lot of people, it's kind of like Aquaman was until recently. He just was the lamest hero because he was too good. And we're a very cynical lot the last decade or so. So I really didn't think that character would ever work. Thor, never thought that would work. And Ant-Man, I mean, you got all these characters that just shouldn't work.
Right.
And they make them work. They made them work to the point where people were excited to see their solo movies. And also they got just more ecstatic to see them budding up. Like the thing we never thought would ever happen, where you get one character jumping from one franchise into another franchise. You've got Hulk and Thor. You've got all these characters crossing the streams that we never even thought possible before. And now they mastered how you do that.
Well, and they even brought
amazing
Guardians into it. So they're bringing space aliens into this world on Earth too. They really managed to craft together something pretty great.
The weirdest comic ever in the world. And they made that one work.
Well, and too, so some of their small characters like Scarlet Witch and Vision and Hawkeye, like these are characters that people aren't overwhelmed with even to this day. But they've become something of a little bit precious to us that they've made us love those characters too. While they may not be Captain America to us, they're still ones that we adore and we.
Yeah, not alone. Like I'm fine with Vision and Scarlet Witch being gone. Like that.
No, Scarlet Witch is my girl.
What?
Yes, I love her.
Really?
One of my favorite moments in this movie is from her.
Yeah. What the whole? You don't know who I am? Well, you will. But then she didn't really do anything.
No,
she just
no, not that.
Okay.
Well, I guess we'll get there. In Endgame, when she meets with Thanos.
You can say it. It's the spoiler cast.
Well, I'm going to save it for the moment.
Okay,
fine.
It's Jesus. One of my moments.
Let's all have a moment. Anyway, it's amazing that they brought this all together. And shout out to Sony, because Sony didn't have to work with them on Spider-Man. They really didn't have to. And a lot of studios haven't with their properties. The fact that they have Spider-Man in here is a huge game changer because it's very important, I think, to have him in Infinity War and Endgame. So that was a great masterstroke. As much as I don't like Uncle Ben in Spider-Man movie, or I'm sorry, Uncle Tony in the Spider-Man movie, I did like the relationship here and Tony wanting to bring that kid back because he feels like he killed him.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of guilt there.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that happened. Well, not really that surprised that it happened, but I was actually waiting to hear what you had to say about it, because it's a sweet moment, and it's a great, powerful, emotional moment. And the whole time I'm watching that moment, like, Aaron's either going to love this or hate this. He's either going to forgive them for what they did with Uncle Ben, or he's going to actually say, screw you, I'm done.
It didn't do that. It doesn't change how I feel about Homecoming, where they forget that there's an Uncle Ben. But I do love the moment here, and it really does work. They built up to it, and it does work for Endgame.
Well, it was nice to see the roles flip, too, where Tony had to watch Spider-Man go into dust, and now this time Spider-Man had to hold Tony as he went away, and his power source faded.
Well, he's not holding him. Pepper's holding him.
Well, he's there. I mean,
he's around. Yeah.
He sits in front of him, and he gets to cry and have his moment with him, his final moment. And it was beautiful that they got to equally share their final, what they thought were their deaths, with each other.
Let's take a count real quick. How many times did you cry during Endgame at all? If at all. John, you go first, because Amanda's probably got 47.
I didn't cry.
You didn't cry once?
Not once.
Savage. Okay, Amanda, what do you got?
Does it count if the last, like, 25 minutes were just crying straight through?
That's one.
Okay, so then, like, one, two, probably two.
That's one.
I've got three. And ironically, I've seen it twice, and I think, Amanda, you saw it twice, yep. And John, you saw it just once. But I cried more the second time, which is odd. You would think you would cry more the first time.
What scenes did you cry at?
Black Widow. Which I didn't cry. I didn't cry at the first time, but I did cry at the second time. Hmm. Cap getting the hammer.
Yes,
that's a huge moment for me. Like, as a fan, that's amazing. And then Tony Stark.
Yeah,
I really loved that moment with him and the hammer.
I cried when he was holding the hammer, and then he said, "Avengers assemble." That was like, and everybody was around. To be fair, I was already crying, but I cried harder at that time. And then,
so that's like 1.5, John.
Yeah. And then when Tony died, then it bled into Happy talking to Morgan and about the cheeseburgers. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm losing it.
I kind of combined.
That was rough too, because I'm like, I like cheeseburgers too.
Oh, the whole thing.
You know,
is
your
just
dad loved cheeseburgers. I'm going to make you all the cheeseburgers you want.
And then Tony Stark has a heart there. Like, I seriously, once the battle began and Cap got the hammer, I cried to pretty much the end of the movie.
I had to control myself to not stand up and applaud.
Aw.
I did.
You should have.
I might have whooped.
What?
Might have been a whoop.
I didn't even know you could whoop.
Yeah, there might have been a whoop. There might have been slapping of hands together.
I knew
there might have been
it.
Some emotions, like some like cheering on, that might have happened.
So something that almost exudes happiness.
I don't even know.
John
what to
got
say.
To experience.
And what was funny is that because we had a friend come with us to the movie, and she bought a ticket someplace else, and I decided to let her sit with my wife so that she wasn't alone, and I sat with strangers because I didn't care. Mm-hmm. Like, the poor strangers next to me had no idea what was going on the whole time. I was just like, yes, oh, ah!
I hope you made those sound effects.
I might have.
Really, that's all we need for this podcast. Eh? We can close out there. John made a motion. As of this podcast, this is Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans' final film for Marvel. Be hard-pressed to see how they can continue at this point, but there could always be cameos. You never know, cameos or something. But what do you think about their legacy specifically with this franchise?
Well, you guys already talked about how their characters weren't something that was adored long ago, and now they are probably they're definitely in the top five most favorited superheroes. I think
agree.
Between DC and Marvel, honestly. People love them. And they gave them something for different people. So Iron Man, you have the more cynical, sarcastic people who are like, I can connect with this guy. Mm-hmm. Even though he's a little bit of an asshole sometimes, I still get him. I feel you, Tony Stark.
A little bit.
I mean, a lot of it. But then he grows a heart. Uh-huh. And then Captain America, who is somebody that we always seen as pure and flawless. And we get to still see not flaws necessarily in him, but humanity, like to the point where you're like, these are still real people. These are people that we can identify ourselves with. And they had such growth in their character arcs that was beautiful to me, going from the beginning to the end here, where they're not the same people that they were in the beginning for the most part, especially Iron Man. I think that's the one who's grown the most. And I just, I love it.
It's hard not to sound too repetitive because these two characters ushered us into this sort of world. And Iron Man, he was the plucky, funny, charming asshole that got us to be interested in the world they were building. And then Captain America comes along and he develops all the heart of it. So you have both sides, the person you want to hang out with and the person that you discover, no, I really want to hang out with this guy. And then they just together were mom and pop their way through developing characters that we that build off of them and meld with them and interact with them in ways that help us really just fall in love with everything we're seeing.
I look at it as Robert Downey Jr. gets all the credit for this franchise working. And I mean, he should get a lion's share of the credit.
He definitely made the interest begin.
If you take either one, him or Cap, out of this, the Avengers portion isn't working.
Right.
It just doesn't work. And I really don't... I've thought and thought and thought about this over the years. I can't picture, at this point anyway, another actor doing as well a job at sincerity and humanity as Chris Evans does as Captain America.
Absolutely.
And that's... It's not a factor of there aren't actors that are talented enough. I believe there are. He just has the right qualities to make that character work and not be overly sappy or hard to sympathize with. Like he feels like a hero. He just does. I mean, everything he does just feels like a hero. Even when I see him in like interviews, I'm like, he is Captain America. I don't understand. To me, especially looking back on it now that we've completed this entire like 11-year arc, those, I mean, 9 years for Evans, but 11 for Robert Downey Jr. Those two actors are so synonymous with those two characters. It's honestly an amazement to me. Like either they've become those characters or they were those guys before. I don't know, but it's hard to tell them apart at this point. They're so synonymous with their respective characters.
Well, and two, we don't have this thing which we often see where we identify one person with their character that's super successful and that's the only thing we can ever picture them doing again. We can see Chris Evans being a different person in different movies and still see him as Chris Evans and not just as Captain America. We're able to still separate that, but that doesn't change the fact that we can never see anybody else as those superheroes because they are those superheroes. They made them as part of themselves, like you said. Either they already were or they became them, and it's just they're glued together. But I can still see them separate. Like I can go watch a movie with Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, and I can be like, oh, this is a really good movie for Chris Evans or Robert Downey Jr. It's not like, oh, Captain America is in this movie. Which I think is great and speaks to them as actors.
Although I'd like to make a suggestion.
Okay. Is this going to be about America's ass?
No, it's going to be offensive probably, but take Robert Downey Jr. from Tropic Thunder and give him the shield. And let's see that version of Falcon works. Huh?
Okay, seeing how you brought that up, I really love that moment of Falcon getting the shield. That's the only moment, the only path for that shield to go that makes sense, because otherwise we would, you know, he would have handed it to Bucky, who in the comics was the actual second successor.
Correct.
To the shield. And people wouldn't have been able to take Bucky with the shield. It just wouldn't work for them. But to see it leapfrog to Falcon, that's the only way that shield can be handed down, because you don't want to see somebody who's like Cap. You want to see somebody different now with that shield.
The only part that... Well, there's two things about that moment that bothered me, though. Is one, old Cap never says anything to Bucky. Like, doesn't have a conversation with Bucky. And I just... That drove me kind of bonkers. Because if you follow the journey, those two are the closest two in the entire universe.
Yeah.
The entire MCU. So for him to not have a small conversation with Bucky just drives me crazy. Number two... Anthony Mackie's beard is weird because it's like doesn't go all the way down his cheek. It goes, it's like a quarter cheek beard.
He's still like weirdly handsome though.
I'm not knocking his looks. He's an attractive man. I'm saying his beard is weird. It's weird.
I didn't notice it.
I noticed it too. I didn't want to pick on him too much about it because you know what? Some people's beard choices are their beard choices. I don't get it, but okay.
This must be a guy thing, because you guys noticed it, and I can notice, like, when a woman's hair is weird, like, ScarJo's hair in the beginning was a wreck.
Oh, that red tint or whatever she had going on?
Well, she just didn't blend that very well. It was like all of a sudden her roots grew out real far.
That was her sadness.
Yeah.
That was her sadness.
No, that's it, but that's exactly what happened. Her roots grew out from having that blonde hair, and she's a natural redhead, at least the character is. So it made sense. I bought it. Sure, it looked like crap. Maybe she can find a hairdresser to help her with her hair again. And she didn't want it. She just came back from a short haircut. Why another short haircut? I buy that.
Maybe in the afterlife.
The whole like having a beard, they go starts in like your cheekbone area, the bottom of it, not the top of it, but the bottom of it. That's a weird choice, because what it does is it makes your neck flare out in a weird way, and then it gets really skinny to where your actual neck is, and it just looks like your face is indented in wacky ways.
Speaking of weird haircuts,
these are important things that we're pointing out, right?
We need to talk about Brie Larson's haircut.
Oh, that's which one? The social justice warrior haircut?
Don't say that. Oh my gosh. Her haircut was so rough, and it was unnecessary. It's not like she's like, oh, I'm flying through space and there's just my hair is in my way. I just need to get rid of it. It was literally just like, oh, some time has passed. I cut my hair and it looks really bad, and here's a way to make a joke about it. Like, her hair looked perfectly fine in the beginning. Why did we need to mess with that?
It's because that's the character. The character,
I don't need that.
Has huh?
I don't need that. I don't.
You may not, but that's the character.
Time has passed. They were trying to show that time had passed for ScarJo and for Brie.
Maybe have her roots grow out a little bit or something, just like ScarJo. I don't.
She's still an attractive woman, so I mean,
she is.
You know,
but
fine.
I was like, this is a weird choice that I could not find an actual reason for, aside from like making it look like the character, but it just did not fit Brie Larson, and they wanted to make a joke about it. So
they want to make jokes about people's appearance a lot, but we'll get there. You know what? Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, or we're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. If you're a Patreon supporter, you can get all kinds of extra stuff. Just go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. We're going to jump right into our spoiler cast.
Stay on.
Hey, Miss Potts.
If you find this recording, don't feel bad about this. Part of the journey is the end. Just for the record, being adrift in space with zero promise of rescue is more fun than it sounds. Food and water ran out 4 days ago. Oxygen will run out tomorrow morning. That'll be it. When I drift off, I will dream about you. It's always you.
All right, here's the story. Reeling from the events of Infinity War, the Avengers reunite to forge a new plan. Use the Quantum Realm to journey back in time, steal the Infinity Stones, come back to the present, and save mankind. Or at least the ones that were lost to the snap. Seems simple enough, except that Thanos catches wind of the plan, thanks Nebula, and everything comes crashing down to yet another all-out battle for global supremacy. Let's start with space. After a heartbreaking opening, which Hawkeye's entire family is wiped away, which I think is probably one of the hardest moments to watch in the whole movie, we are led back to space, where Tony Stark is slowly dying after the events in Infinity War left him stranded. Unlike the last film, where our heroes fought different battles light years apart, this time our heroes are brought, even from the furthest reaches of space, to assemble back on Earth, where we dealt for the better part of an hour with the ramifications of the snap. What did you guys think about the loss? Or, I'm sorry, how the film chose to start, spending a strong portion of its first hour dealing with that loss and the devastation that was caused from it.
It's an incredible move for them. They were able to show the humanity in each of the heroes and how it affected them. And I loved that they chose to show like the gravity of what they were actually dealing with that loss and devastation, and not just to the superheroes, but to everybody else. Like when Ant-Man crosses that kid who's riding a bicycle and he's 5 years later still kind of crying and unable to talk about it. We're able to feel that loss. We're able to feel it when Cap is sitting there in his group therapy session.
And the guy's talking about his date with the guy. And,
And everybody's just still so broken from everything. But I still think that probably about 10 minutes could have been trimmed from this whole, like, let's search about the time travel and figure that out and how is everything affecting everything. That could have been shortened a little bit, but it was still a great move for them to make us they needed to set that tone so we could feel for those characters later. We could feel for everybody who was experiencing this loss.
That first hour of the movie was actually pretty powerful, because most of the Marvel movies, they start off in a way to kind of introduce us into the world, and they start off in a way to get us like feeling good and bouncing our heads around and, you know, usually just being kind of happy about what we were about to watch. This one put us in a position where that we had to start from the bottom and work our way up. And it was interesting step for them, because it's not something they've ever really done. And yet it was powerfully done, and especially that point where Barton's family is gone. That was hard. That was like, it gutted me to see that.
It set the stakes for the rest of the movie too.
It's kind of unfair. His whole family's gone. Like, you couldn't leave one kid.
Well,
it's supposed to be 50% of the planet, and apparently his family got the raw end of that deal.
So did the Guardians.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
We're seeing like a lot of
clumps. Apparently all of Peter Parker's classmates. Boy.
I don't know why you don't understand. It doesn't have to be split evenly.
I understand, but like, so they come back five years later and they're supposed to be the same age or whatever, but apparently his entire classmates from the first movie were also part of the snap, because they are still in the same grade. I don't understand.
They were part of the snap.
Yeah, but it's in the script.
It's just weird. It's a weird thing. But for me, it was an interesting way to go about it, because I kind of thought we were just going to get right back into the action. And in a way we did, because you do get the scene where they confront Thanos and they cut his head off and everything else. So we did get that, where they do confront him immediately, but it didn't work. So basically we have two plans against Thanos, Infinity War and this one, which just didn't work, which I thought was really an interesting way to take it. I didn't think they would do that. But then to spend a good 45 minutes to an hour grieving, I do agree it could have went a little slower, but
a little slower.
Or I'm sorry, a little faster. It could have picked up the pace a little bit, but I did like those moments. I mean, I'm glad that they were there, and I'm glad we felt the weight of everything. And honestly, the second time I saw it, it sat with me a little better. Maybe it's because of expectations were out of the way. I don't know, but it still is a little languishly paced. It could have been a little faster, but I did like that they made that choice, because too often in these movies, we don't actually get to sit with the results of anything. It's always bad guy makes a little win, we deal with it for like 4 minutes, and then we move on to the good guys overcoming whatever that was. Here we have like a whole hour where, hey, everybody lost 5 years later. For 5 years, everybody lost. And it was interesting. Fascinating way to take it.
You know, it's funny, because when they get to that whole scene where they find Thanos and they beat him, and you're almost going like, yeah, they're going to fix it right now, which felt weird, because we're only an hour into the movie. So what's going to be left of it? What I already know is going to be a 3-hour movie. And it turns out nothing. We still had a whole bunch of hurting to get through. And that's what made the positive moments in the second half start having such a great impact, because it really started being brick by brick, getting us out of that slump of the first hour and a half, and how we felt at the ending of Infinity War.
If they would have just been a little bit more succinct, which is funny coming from me, with the time travel.
preaching to the choir. Hallelujah.
If they would have done that, they would have had more time to expand on the action of the actual battle, give more screen time to the other superheroes to see them do their thing in the battle. That, to me, would have been more effective.
We'll get there, but that last hour, to me, is pitch perfect. I don't need it longer, shorter, anything. I think that was 100% pitch perfect.
I don't, because I think there's characters that didn't get enough action screen time.
Yeah, there may be characters that didn't get enough action screen time, but the characters we got are the more powerful characters. Cap and Iron Man getting that action screen time at the end, which we're jumping way ahead, but that was necessary and important. And for anybody else to get anywhere near the amount of screen time that they did would be just silly.
No, but I think that Hulk in the end should have had a little bit more screen time than Spider-Man. Hulk has been invested with multiple of his own movies.
He did, though. I mean, he's the whole reason why the snap worked.
He lifted the I'm talking about in the action battle sequence.
But he's wounded, though, so there's only so much he could do.
But then they put his hand, so he comes up with Ant-Man, they put his hand out, and he's all, I'm ready for the fight! And then he's gone. Nothing else happens with them.
Eh.
And that was, to me, that was a little disappointing, because there are some huge Hulk fans out there who basically, and I have a resolution to all of this, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay, well, let's get there. Mind. Scott Lang unexpectedly shoots back 5 years later. He's been hanging out in the back of a crappy van, and he has an idea. Find the most intelligent minds possible, i.e. the Avengers, and devise a way to use the quantum realm to bounce back in time and change everything that happens. This is where time travel rules get complicated, but it does make sense if you really think about it. We meet Hulk, who was morphed into always Mark Ruffalo, but green and kind. It's a weird combination there. Tony has a wife and a baby girl. There are stakes both moving forward and now for going back. So there is a danger for either one. If you keep going forward and ignore it, the people stay dead. If you go back, there's a chance that it could affect some people's current life, which we find out isn't the way it works. Now, to explain this for people that didn't quite understand it, because some people don't, they're going with the theory that time is a line.
Shouldn't we talk about that in the time portion?
Yeah, I guess we should. All right, so let's talk about the complexity of creating the time travel and using the quantum realm to do that. I mean, they had to devise this plan. It seems like Banner is not really as adept at this as Tony Stark.
It's not that he's not as adept as Tony Stark, but then maybe in this sort of field, yeah, he's not as adept, but it doesn't work without Hulk starting the process. And then Tony finds the hole in which Hulk can't, I keep on calling him Hulk, but I should be calling him Banner, but he finds the hole in which Banner can't see and finishes the whole circle. So it is an interesting way of telling the story, and I still can't get my head around how they're getting away with some of these time travel aspects of it, but it's weird. It just really is weird.
We needed Tony Stark to have his family. We needed to see how in love he was with his family, that he had everything he wanted, because we know that he's the only one who can really make this 100% happen. As much as Professor Hulk is being Professor Hulk, and he's not much Hulk, he's more Bruce Banner and more so just professory, he still cannot do the same things that Tony Stark can do. And we needed to have the stakes set for Tony. It was important for his timeline. So that way, by the end of the film, we still, I mean, of course, we would have been sad, but we needed to feel the impact on many different levels. So we needed Tony to have his family and have his life that he always wanted and never wanted to give up, so that way we could feel his self-sacrifice. We needed, I guess in some respect, we needed Mark Ruffalo to be Professor more so than Hulk, because that is what really helped bring Tony back into it, is having his, like, he's trying, but Tony knows, I can figure this out better than anybody else can.
Let me guess, he came back as a baby.
Yeah. I think somebody wet my pants. I can't tell if it's baby me or old me or me.
You know, you have Tony Stark, and they are showing you, yeah, he has stakes. So it's a huge risk for him to go back in time. You know, there's a chance it could cost him everything, or it could cost him himself. But they don't really mention that about Ant-Man. Well, if Ant-Man goes in the past and dies and his daughter is left alone, you know, I feel like that should have been addressed.
That's a good point.
But it wasn't really. That said, this was a very important thing to give Tony Stark a stake in going back in time and affecting and risking everything to reset the world. That was necessary, because otherwise there's no reason for them not to do it. And he needed a reason to not do it, so that there is a debate in his mind, I guess.
To your point about Ant-Man, I think the reason that they wanted to show that everybody else can be a little bit more selfless than Tony, that Ant-Man, he saw his daughter, he got to hug her, he had those moments, but he was still willing to do what it took to make things right. Whereas Tony Stark was still in a very selfish mindset, which his character overcomes by the end of the movie.
I don't think it's a selfish mindset, though. It's practical.
It's practical, but it is still selfish when you're talking about protecting your life, because it's not like
versus
versus billions of
or
people.
Trillions, whatever.
And every single person in the Avengers group here trying to save somebody has something to lose. They do have something to lose, but Tony's like, he flat out says it to Cap. He's like, I have to be real with you. My priorities are to keep my family alive, to keep the life that I have, because I've always wanted this. It wasn't like he ever said.
Wanted this as a stretch. Recently wanted this.
Yeah, recently wanted this. He wasn't even saying like, I need to make sure that my daughter is always protected. It was from a very selfish motive. I gotta
make sure my daughter's going to be here.
Yeah, it was like, this is what I want to keep alive. I'm not going to sacrifice anything, my own personal life here, to protect everybody else. So we'll do what I can within fitting within my priorities.
The thing you're missing is that Scott gets something out of fixing the world, which is he gets hope back.
Yeah,
which is really important to him.
That's true.
So as much as his cast, having Cassie and taking care of Cassie is important, getting hope back is equally important to him. So he's not necessarily coming at this as altruistic as you may be thinking he is. Not a good or bad thing about him. He's trying, but he's actually trying to make things happen. And the thing you're forgetting about Tony is that, sure, he wanted to protect his family, but as soon as they came at him with a thing that they could possibly work that needed exactly him to solve it, he couldn't help himself. Mm-hmm. He couldn't stop himself from actually finding a way and coming up with a way to make the whole process work. So that actually goes to show as to why the movie ended the way it had to move, because Tony coming to his final portion of this movie was the only answer to, or only way to end his line, because of just of what we know of what Iron Man is. He's always there for the fight. He's always there to protect, and he's always the one who thinks he's got the only answer there. And that's probably one of the reasons why they had him end the way he did.
Well, that, and Donnie Jr. is like, my contract's up, dude. I'm tired.
I'm just looking at it from a story right. point of view.
I understand. What did you guys think about this whole Hulk issue, where we have Hulk completely in Ruffalo form at this point? We no longer have Banner versus Hulk. We have Hulkaner, or whatever.
Professor Hulk.
Brulk. We have Brulk.
Well, this is something that actually happens in the comics, too. This makes sense to me, because in the comics, we have a couple of different iterations of Hulk. We have Big Dumb Hulk, we have Smart Hulk, and then soon after we go back to insanely dumb but powerful Hulk, and he goes back and forth between different levels. So for them to do it, I thought it was great. I actually miss Dumb Hulk, because I don't know, I think he's adorable.
Hulk smash.
I'm like, he's an officer, I like the whole thing. So I missed him quite a bit. But I liked seeing this the way they're actually changing this character, because this character is easy to write a story around. Hulk smash, or oh my god, I got turned into this guy again. That's a hard character or a boring story to write around.
The more time you spend as Professor, like in Professor mode, the less likely it is for Giant Hulk to come out and Dum Dum to be present. Like he gets invested in that part of himself, and I get that. And I liked that we have Professor Bruce Banner here, that we don't have just the big dumb green guy. But I still would have liked a little bit more fan service for a conclusion like this, where he was more involved in the fight. Where he was,
well, he might have more to do in the future movies too. We don't know.
Yeah,
yet.
We're not losing him yet.
True. Although,
but when they go back to New York and they're like Hulk smash, he's like, oh god.
Yeah, that was funny.
This is humiliating.
I just wish that, because they seem to show that he has a very good understanding and stability with himself now, where he can grasp, this is, I need to stay within this range. But that range didn't really do anything Hulk wise. Like, he was not Hulk, he was just Bruce Banner with a green body. And that's the thing that kind of bothered me, that they didn't even let that kind of come out a little bit. The only thing he did was, like, he obviously put on the gauntlet, which still takes a lot of energy out of him, and I get that. And then he barely held up that building. But other than that, he wasn't, like, very involved in being Hulk and coming out and trying to use his muscle that he has. There was no stakes set for him, where he was like, I have to potentially risk losing my Bruce Banner side of things and let the angry Hulk come out to protect so-and-so or whatever it might be. I mean, that's the thing that kind of bothered me, where I was like, I push and pull with it. And I think overall, I've sat on this and I've thought about it a lot over the last 24 hours.
I guess.
I have. This has been, aside from Thor,
it's like
this has
he's never been a primary character, so I'm not worried about it.
And he's not, but he also has been primary to this franchise because he's had multiple iterations of his own movies.
He's about as relevant as Hawkeye.
He's more relevant than Hawkeye, I would argue.
No, he's about as relevant as Hawkeye.
Yeah, Hawkeye hasn't had his own movies.
Hulk.
Well, technically, this Hulk hasn't either.
Well, he had the Incredible Hulk, if you want to count that, but I don't count it.
I mean,
they can count it all they want, but I'm not counting it.
I think you should still probably count it. But overall, I was still happy to see that they made some sort of an arc and a transition with his character. And that, you know, he was still funny.
That's a huge arc. I mean, he was more for brain than brawn this time, as opposed to the past movies where it's just smash everything.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a natural progression, personally.
I still liked it.
The one I didn't care for as much is the Thor revelation. And that's from the comics, too. So Fat Thor is in the comics. And I'm fine with that he's in a depression. I think that's a really cool way to look at it, because he is. And Hemsworth plays exactly how he's supposed to play. And seeing it two times didn't really change my opinion on this one. That opinion pretty much stays. To me, this movie, especially, they did a little bit in the past movies, but here where it felt like Hemsworth was in on the joke, here I think Thor becomes the joke. That's a problem for me. And not just because it's fat shaming and all that jive. I mean, there's a couple fat jokes, but a lot of it is based on depression and everything else. There's just a lot of jokes made at Thor's expense, and he never really comes across as the God of Thunder until the last, 5 minutes or something. And I get that they were going for an arc, and I totally understand the arc they were going for, which is he's in a depression, he's in a funk, he sees his mother talks some sense into him, he realizes that you have to be who you are, stop trying to be who you think you should be, just be who you are, whatever. I get that. It's just how it played out came across more as he's a boob. Once again, he's a boob and not Thor.
For God's sakes. I loved his story because the whole idea that he became depressed, the whole idea that he became Fat Thor. The way they were actually building up that moment in which he talks to his mother actually felt like they were trying to build up a moment where he wanted to see Jane. And then his focus got rearranged from wanting to see Jane to wanting to sit down and have another chat with his mother, which is something that I massively identified with. Like, at first, when they're going back and forth, like, oh my God, Jane, 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 Jane. And I saw Rene Russo and I'm like, no, that's where you need to go, bro. And he does go that way. I cheered because it was just, this was not like one of those loud cheers. It's like one of those inside my head cheers. But still, like if I were given the chance to talk to my mother again, especially in a situation in which he was in, I would take that in a heartbeat. It was nice to see that moment. It was nice to live in that moment and to see how it affected him and brought him out of his funk or start bringing him out of his funk was really important because, yeah, in the first movie, he should have gone for the head and he's just dwelling on the whole thing and it just keeps on getting worse and worse until he actually goes for the head and it does nothing to alleviate his stress or alleviate his self.
His failure. His failure.
His failure.
Feeling a failure. Yeah.
Yeah, I just loved it. It was great. I've been there, so I identified with it.
I agree. That moment was beautiful. It's just the other stuff I didn't care for.
I feel like they wasted his character. They made him, as it's already been mentioned, the butt of the joke through the entire movie. They elected to introduce the depth of his trauma and his depression and showed it by making him Fat Thor. But not only did they do that, that was the running joke for 3 hours. The things that bother me about this in particular, and I have this numbered out for you all. Number one, they never gave Thor a godly conclusion that he deserved in its entirety. Two, by making fat jokes the entire movie, since his weight stems from his depression, they essentially elected to make it a mockery because the support was just not necessarily there at that point. Three, does not fit with the tone of the movie because they introduce a really great mental health message underneath all of this by showing Cap running group therapy, Banner talking to Thor and telling him he's worried about him, getting him out of his slump. And then Thor gets his hammer and he says, I'm still worthy. That's a great moment. That's really impactful for him. All of this was a great way to show that men are allowed to feel their emotions and overcome them. But then after you do all of that, you continue to make his fatness a joke. Pick a tone, pick a message.
In Infinity War, they made jokes about how he's super fit and super strong and an amazing looking guy, whereas everybody else in the room is chubby and fat.
I don't really think it's that funny.
Yeah, I tried.
But outside of that, the rest of the characters, I think, all hit.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with anybody. I just, that one was kind of like, whatever. Although the As Guardians of the Galaxy joke
that
is
was really
freaking
funny.
Hilarious. And I love the end where Valkyrie gets the, she's the king. She's a new king.
Is anyone?
And I like how he never calls her a queen. He just says, you're the new king. You know, basically implies you're the new king. I like that. I'm like, yeah, you don't have to change the title. You be the king. That's cool.
Is anyone bothered by her accent, though?
Not at all.
Really?
No.
Nope. Okay.
Two times, and I was like,
Not at all. All right, now we're going to go to time. Time travel. It's a dicey plot point for any movie, but this one is approaching it a little bit different because time has already happened, so you can't change the past. So it's approaching it by the way that a lot of theoretical physicists approach it, which is time is a straight line. If it happened, it doesn't matter where you go in the timeline. It's not going to change the past. The past already happened. So if you go to the past, that becomes your present. If you go back to the future, your past becomes your, you know, it's confusing, but it makes sense if you actually stop and think about it. It really does. And I think they do a pretty decent job of explaining it. You can hop back, you can steal the stones, you can come back, you can resnap the world into existence. That's the plan. This leads us to our heroes bouncing in and out of their previous movies. It also leads to Black Widow's death. Let's talk a little bit about this plot line and how they used it, because I am a huge fan, more so the second time than I was the first time, of them realizing that this is going to be the culmination of all the previous movies and using many of their previous movies to even complete this one, which I thought was a beautiful touch.
Yeah, you get a lot of nostalgia and you get to reminisce on some of those movies where you're like, oh, I remember this happening. And it was a great way for them to do that. I still feel like they broke some of their rules in the time travel thing.
I don't think I've watched it the second time, paid very close attention to it. I don't think they broke a single rule.
So Nebula killed her past self, but it doesn't affect her future self because they did establish that's not how time travel works.
Correct.
And I'm cool with that. That works. I actually think it's more effective than most time travel movies because you can do those things and it's not going to alter everything.
Right.
And I liked that they did that. But the thing that, and I guess confuses me, maybe I'm misunderstanding how it works, but I really feel like it breaks some of their rules, is that, so you have this thing where you branch off, and when you remove the stones, it branches off a path from the primary reality. It creates a separate...
unless you put them back.
Unless right. you put them back. But yet they can go get all of the stones, remove them from different times, which branches off each time they're removing a stone, it branches off, and then yet they come back to the exact same reality with all of the stones together, where they're all in the same reality, which wouldn't make sense because they're breaking off those stones with different realities.
Well, because they at the end, they go back and reset them. And that particular moment wouldn't really change a whole lot. They're still in that moment. So.
But the stones didn't go back until the very, very end when Cap. So that whole time, all of these stones are being removed, all of these different branches of time and where they're making changes, where things are happening in them, but yet they all kind of swoop back in through the little quantum realm and they come back at the exact same point together, which to me, based off of how they explain their time travel, they should have been in separate realities. They should have been on their separate branches, not on the exact same one of the path that they originally started on, because they created branches by removing the stones.
Or it assumes that they won and Cap took everything back.
But it wouldn't have happened yet.
See, here's where we got to just go into the it's time travel. It's not real.
Well, no, so they say time travel is a legitimate possibility.
Okay, it's comic book, so none of this is possible. And I think they do a good enough job of explaining that. Cap does go back, put them all back in the timeline, so the timeline doesn't branch. So therefore, it doesn't actually happen. Now, can you make an argument? I guess you could, but there's not a single time travel movie you can show me where there's not an argument against everything that they say.
And I agree with that. I just don't know why you would base your last movie on that when you're not able to fully flesh out those things.
I have problems with the time travel just because with so many movies of time travel, my brain's going, wait a minute. So Thanos for 2014 can show up and they can kill that Thanos, but still there is still a 2018 Thanos who shows up and does the snap. I'm trying to avoid getting hung up on all that. And in my mind, I'm just going, you know what? This is a different universe. This is just how it works, and just ignore it and keep moving because it's still fun and it's still enjoyable.
Any time travel movie to me, you just got to accept it or it's not going to work. And
right.
That is ridiculous. Yep, I've never, even Back to the Future, everybody raves, Back to the Future is great. You can rip that movie apart if you really think logically about it. It just doesn't make any damn sense. Any damn sense. What do you mean he's partially invisible? I'm sorry, if he's gone from the timeline, he's gone. You just disappear. You don't like partially start going invisible and become transparent while you're rocking out on a guitar. That's just not how it would work. It doesn't make any sense to me. A human body can't do that. but it does it, and we buy it because it's a cool movie.
Right.
I have a whole problem with the whole Captain America thing, because that's the only one where I'm like, well, that would definitely disrupt the timeline, because he's there for years with her, and apparently someone's going to notice, hey, you look a lot like Captain America, don't you?
Well, and she's already got the young Captain America. It's not like young Captain America disappeared. She's still dating young Captain America. So what does he do? Go back to his old, his young self and say, hold on, pal. Hold on.
Well, it's a matter of where in the time, because he disappeared in 1945. So he was gone for that whole time. He was gone for 70 years.
So you think he just hopped back to the point where he was gone and just
don't think
lived
it.
That
I know
life.
It because they said it.
Right.
Yeah. But would it affect everything? Yeah, probably. And I know she got married. So maybe she ended up marrying Captain America. And that was like what they were paying homage to when we know, we hear that she had this great life. I don't know. But at some point, you just got to accept it and roll with it. And I thought it was quite brilliant how they used it to pay homage to their past movies. Honestly, it's a comic book movie. So the idea that they can even do this is ridiculous. But what are you going
to
do?
If you think back to the last few times we saw Peggy when she was in the assisted living facility, there were so many times where she acted as if she had a full life with Steve, and everyone just assumed it was dementia.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
That is true.
I think it's true. I haven't rewatched them recently, but now I'm going to have to. Thanks a lot, John.
You're welcome. You don't have enough things to do with your time.
Speaking of, because you brought up Black Widow, I am in love with the way that they handled her character. I've never been like a crazy Black Widow fan. I've always been very much so like, okay, she's here. Scar Jo is a great actress. I do enjoy her on screen, but the character just never felt really, I guess she just never felt fully
served.
She never
stood out. Yeah, she never stood out to me. I mean, she was always fine. She's always the fine of the group.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, it was really just because Scar Jo can sell a character that we were like, oh, okay, you know, I like her. She's cool, whatever. And there's a lot of people who on the interwebs are very angry about a female being self-sacrificed and another death and blah, blah, blah.
Who's saying? I haven't seen this anywhere.
There are multiple articles because this has been a very common theme in other movies where women die at the expense of men and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make here is this is a great way for her to say, I've done everything I needed to do. I want you to have the life that you need to have. I'm doing what I need to do. Because this is what I want to do. This is a woman making her own choice, and I think that's incredible. I don't think that anyone should try to take away from that, and I don't think that it's a bad thing or anti-feminine or anything like that. And as the woman on the podcast here, I wanted to have my voice in this and say that it was a great send-off for her character, and it was a great sacrifice for her to make.
Okay.
What I liked about the moment, which kind of surprised me about Black Widow taking her own life or sacrificing herself, two things. One, that proves that you can't come back from it. So I'm kind of curious how her spinoff movie is going to work. That's going to be weird. But she's willing to do it. And then those two having that, because they're like brother and sister, and having that entire back and forth of fighting to whoever's going to sacrifice themselves. I just love that moment. I thought it was, I mean, yeah, it's a sad moment, but it also kind of was fun. I mean, I'm like, who's going to win? I don't know who's going to win. And every time I thought one won, the other one won. And then the other one won. And then she finally does it. It's a great moment. She's like, let me go. And he can't do anything about it anymore. It's not his choice anymore. It's just, it's a great moment. I really was moved by her sacrifice. And either one of them sacrificing in that moment would have been.
Yeah, it would have been beautiful.
I really felt for Clint in that moment, because not only was he, had he driven himself to a point where who he was had changed because of the loss of his family, and he accepted the fact that he shouldn't be with his family become as the person he is now, and then he has to fight back and forth with his best friend to see which one of them is going to sacrifice themselves for this moment. I mean, it was really hard for Clint. I really feel for him.
I love that each sacrifice for this stone has never been a romantic sacrifice. It's always been like a very familial thing. So we have Thanos who sacrificed his daughter, and now we have these two where they're not actually related. But
yeah, they're more family.
But they're more like family. It wasn't anything where like, I love you so much, I'm going to sacrifice myself so you don't have to die because, you know, in our relationship, and then it kind of goes back and forth. It was, I love you as my family. I'm going to do this because you're my family. Or, you know, in Thanos' case, it was, I love my family so much, but too bad because I want to ruin the world.
Well, they always had Budapest.
Aww.
Aww.
So sad. Really, how is her spinoff going to work?
Is it set?
We'll probably find out what Budapest is all about.
Is it going to be called Black Widow Splat? I don't know.
Such a lame joke.
How this works. All right, reality. I think we've already kind of covered it, but before we get to the conclusion of the events in the series, let's take a reality break. Is there anything that doesn't work for you? We already talked about several things that don't. Is there anything else missing? How do you guys feel about Captain Marvel? Did she change how we felt? Because we weren't that thrilled with her first run at it. What about here?
I don't think she did a lot to improve her first run on it, but she wasn't a problem, whereas she was a problem in her own movie. So I appreciated that she was here. She was basically Deus Ex Machina, the person, and that's about it. So we're still having to see what happens in her next movie to see how I feel, or if it changes how I feel about the character. But right now I'm just still kind of like, eh. But my only real problems with this is the time travel stuff, because I'm still like bendy on it. I'm still like timey-wimey, oh crap. I don't know what the hell's going on and I don't understand it. And I'm just trying to bargain with myself enough to get past it at this point.
I've read so many articles about like how this is scientifically possible and all of these different things. And then like the one issues. Yes, this is actually derived. Time travel. This is derived from legitimate scientific minds. They've agreed with them.
Yeah, I get that. But I mean, I get how time works, but in terms of this is possible.
No. It's just the time travel part of it.
Yeah.
And it's been very fascinating to realize that there's quite a bit more outside of, like, they legitimately did some research on this.
That's a theory. I want to see somebody go back in time and.
How do you know they haven't?
Oh, I'm pretty sure they haven't.
You don't know. You don't know.
I'm pretty certain.
You don't know.
Let me ask you a question in terms of, because you're a lady.
Mm-hmm.
They have the girl power moment where they all gather up and they go running at the camera and whatnot. As guys, I think John and I were watching, like, going, okay, well, that feels like a little like, okay, we relate to the party, but we really weren't late to the party, guys. Look at all these ladies we've got in this group already. Was it a powerful moment for you as a woman, or did it feel so self-serving?
Absolutely. I loved it. I thought it was amazing because they didn't, to me, it wasn't something where they were like, okay, we just need to do this because we need to have women here. It was, this is a moment that women have experienced in their own life and on a much smaller scale, obviously, a much different scale.
You've had a big guy snap his fingers and wipe out half your planet?
You've had friends who have been in a situation where somebody is attacking that girl and you want to be there to protect them. And this was a moment where it was like, we're here to protect this girl. We're together. We're all together. And it wasn't like the women were going against the men or that they were rivaling them or anything like that. I liked that it was just, we're going to back her up. You know, we see that this character that has been doing so much for us is here and we're going to stand behind her. And I loved that. Now, Captain Marvel herself, I loved her in the beginning and I started to like lose my interest again, just like I did in the movie Captain Marvel, which was kind of disappointing. I wanted to see her interact with the Avengers for the first time because all we see is she drops it down and then the next scene, they're jumping in and they're just talking about their plans. We don't actually get to see her introduce herself or, you know, try to do much of that.
She doesn't seem like she has a personality.
Which is sad.
And when she has her power moments, you know, her power moments, like you can see it in Hemsworth's face. You can see it in Gamora's face. You can see it in Tony Stark's face.
Even Valkyrie's face.
Everybody's face but Captain Marvel. So I'm not picking on Captain Marvel. I'm just saying she looks like she has to poop. She doesn't look like she's having a moment of power. It's just like, oh, I gotta go to the bathroom.
She doesn't sell it. The thing that I loved, the moments that I loved the most with her is when she was being like a regular person when she was in that room with
hello
them.
There, Peter Parker. I like that moment.
Yeah. And also when we see the actual lights come through of Captain Marvel coming to save. So when you see that spark of, like, it looks like the sun is now all of a sudden right in front of your eyes.
Yeah, like, what are they firing at? That was a cool moment.
Those things were cool, but that wasn't necessarily Brie Larson's Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that was just a cool special effect thing.
The concept of Captain Marvel. And so this has been, as much as I love Brie Larson, I feel like she's not as suitable for the role as I was eagerly hoping, and it's a little disappointing.
Yeah, family.
Well, I really enjoyed seeing the female lineup kind of pop up and do a power pose right there because, as a fan of the comics, there's actually a Avengers comic called A-Force, and it's a full female led comic series of Avengers, and it's a lot of those characters we saw in the lineup. Valkyrie's in there. Captain Marvel, and then some characters we don't have yet, which is like She-Hulk and a few others. Rescue, which is what we got Rescue in this movie. That was pretty cool. She pops in and out of the whole series.
Who's Rescue?
Pepper Potts.
Oh, I didn't know that was her character name. Honestly, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Pepper Potts in her Iron Man suit is called Rescue.
Okay. I did not know that.
The only thing of comics that I've recently learned was about the A-Force thing, and that's like super intrigued me that this was an actual moment. They didn't do it just for service. So I'm glad that John brought that up.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Thanks, John. Thanks for bringing it.
You're welcome.
Now let's move.
I'm here.
Let's move on to Soul. We're going to end this thing nothing but positive here. We have the conclusion of events. The stones are brought back, but Thanos uses Nebula, the worst secret keeper in the entire galaxy, and her Pym particles to get back to modern times, right, and apparently get a whole ship in that thing, which is, okay, there you go. There's your time travel problem again. Right after Hulk uses the stones to bring everyone back. And apparently they haven't aged a day. So where they show up is exactly right after they were dusted. So they're 5 years in the future. And they're ready to kick Thanos' ass. An enormous battle breaks out. Every hero gets a little bit of a taste. Apparently not all of them. And we acknowledge Hulk didn't get his little Hulkbuster moment. But most importantly, the soul of the entire MCU, Tony Stark and Captain America, each get their most important moments to date. Captain America finally wields, oh, how do you say it?
Mjolnir.
Okay. Mjolnir?
Or meow meow.
Okay. Captain America finally yields meow meow.
Mjolnir.
And Tony Stark says, for the last time, I am Iron Man.
Oh my gosh, I like cried thinking about it.
Now, for me, this last hour, pitch perfect. I've rewatched it. I've seen, like I said, I saw it twice. Not a second do I think was anything mishandled in that final hour. Just fantastically done.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the whole Captain America picking up Mjolnir was just amazing. And then Thor's reaction to it was my favorite part of it. Like, I knew it this whole time. and the people I went with didn't understand, like, the power of that moment. And I said, I had to remind them. You had to look back at Age of Ultron when the Cap goes to pick up the hammer and the hammer budges a second. Mm-hmm. And Thor gets nervous and Cap just plays it off like nothing ever happened, like that. And for him to just finally just pick it up as if he knew he was able to pick it up and just go with it. I get chills just thinking about that moment.
I thought it was amazing. The way that this movie concluded, I seriously feel like it was pretty much perfect. I loved that Cap had his moment where he was swinging that hammer to Pound Town with his Avengers Assemble. And I was
I think you and I have a different opinion what Pound Town is.
I was hoping you would catch that. But like, I went into this assuming Cap would be the only one to die a heroic death. I don't know if I'm alone in that.
No, I didn't think Tony Stark would die. Because once I knew he had a kid, I'm like, well, they're not going to kill him off.
Well, I just figured right. Captain America is always the one to do.
Agreed.
He's the one who would sacrifice himself. But
that's what made it better, I believe, because I never thought Tony Stark would sacrifice himself.
Exactly. Yeah. And in the MCU, this whole universe, these movies began with Iron Man, and we're getting he's the bookend of this story mm-hmm. here. We started with him and now we're concluding with him. And I thought that was the most perfect fitting ending. And as much as it broke my heart, it was exactly, I got what I didn't realize I needed, which was to have this character arc concluded here. And I think they set it up so perfectly, which to me still astounds me how great they did a job of his character going from such a self-interested character. I don't want to say selfish. I mean, he is at times, but now he's just more self-interested to being the most selfless of all of them. And he was always going to be that because Doctor Strange said there's only one way this ends. And if I tell you this is not, it's not going to happen. And he saw that in his.
And then he kind of tells him anyway. I'm just saying he puts up his finger.
Well, like, he does. He's like,
hey,
it's
this
your time.
Is your time. Yeah. You're going to need to die right now.
Yeah, right.
Make this work.
But it was beautiful. And it was everything that I wanted it to be. It was, we got to see his stakes raised in the beginning of this movie where he's got his family. He's got his daughter. He's so happy. She loves him 3,000. And then we have the moment where he's like, I can sacrifice all of that for everybody here. Like for the greater good. And the moment he has with his father, I think, is really what solidifies that, because he's talking to his dad and he's like, what would be so bad about you having a boy and turning out like you? And his dad tells him, the greater good has never outweighed my selfish interests. And that's when I think Tony really.
Rarely. He said rarely, not
rarely.
Never.
I think that's when Tony seriously is like, this is, I want to be different. I don't want to be that person. I think the whole time he was always trying to be his dad and trying to live up to expectations and always trying to be smarter and better and cooler. And now he's like, I can just be. Like, I just do what's right. And this was his time to shine for that.
I love the Tony moment, but I love Cap more. Sorry, that whole wielding the hammer was honestly the greatest moment in all the comics or all the movies for me.
I loved his little upcut thing.
Just all the movies entirely. Just seeing him. It's a powerful moment because you know in the comics it happens and you know he can. So when he's getting his ass kicked and his shield's broke and everything else, and you think he's done for the count, and that's where you think he's going to make the sacrifice. It's a beautiful moment to have. But not only that moment, it's the Doctor Strange bringing everybody there and seeing every character on screen, something we didn't get in Infinity War because they were all broken up and throughout the mm-hmm. galaxy and stuff. Here you have mm-hmm. all of them in that moment. And that almost brought tears to my eyes, too. Just to see every character from the movie show up was pretty fantastic.
Black Panther coming through the gate. Like, I got chills, and that's one of the first audible yelps I gave when he came out of the gate. Like, it was pretty great. One of my favorite moments is the whole Cap catches Stormbreaker and Thor catches Mjolnir, and he's like, no, you get the little one.
That was really funny.
But yeah, the gates opening up and everyone coming through, I was just so happy to see that. And that in those moments, which we didn't see most of those characters the entire movie. So for them to even get moments, like Doctor Strange got a small moment, Black Panther got a small moment. It was just nice to see that. And the Guardians showed up and they each get a little mm-hmm. bit of a moment too, was just fantastic. I can't think of a better way to end that.
Yeah, I have to agree. I totally started tearing up too when Doctor Strange first opened that portal for Black Panther and they started walking through. I was like, oh.
I'm over there like, Wakanda forever! Why is nobody yelling Wakanda forever? Why?
Somebody had yelled it at one thing. I can't
Where's
remember who said
Nakia?
It.
Where's Nakia? That's what I want to know. Where's Nakia? She's like the best fighter in Black Panther. Apparently, they're like, oh, Lupita, she's the only one who's really got other stuff going on. So she's not going to be able to be here today for either movie. Like, she's not in Infinity War either.
Oh.
And she's a huge character in Black Panther. So it's kind of bummed. Apparently, she didn't want to sign that 10-movie deal. She's like, Lupita's got some other stuff coming up. She's going to be in Us. She don't have time for this. But that whole conclusion, that was a breathtaking culmination of kudos to the Russos for putting that all together. Just absolutely stunning.
He used the stones again.
Hey, we'd be going in shorthanded, you know?
Look, he's still got the stones, so...
So let's get him. Use them to bring everyone back.
Just like that.
Yeah, just like that.
Even if there's a small chance that we can undo this, I mean, we owe it to everyone who's not in this room to try.
If we do this, how do we know it's going to end any differently than it did before?
Because before you didn't have me.
Hey, new girl, everybody in this room is about that superhero life. And if you don't mind my asking, where the hell have you been all this time?
There are a lot of other planets in the universe. And unfortunately, they didn't have you guys.
That brings us to Power, the ending of it all. Tony's funeral, Wanda and Hawkeye sitting there having their conversation, Hawkeye and his family, Hulk, Thor with the Guardians, Cap turns his shield over to Falcon, he put all the stones back, finally lives a little bit of that sweet life, Peggy Carter, doesn't say goodbye to Bucky, but that's beside the point. Let's talk about the actual ending. After they defeat Thanos, they bring everything down. Tony Stark dusts the man. The ending where we have our funeral and everything that happens after.
I really love the way that ending worked out, especially the moment in which Falcon gets the shield from it passing over from Bucky. Because we all know from the comics, Bucky was not supposed to be the next Cap, but Bucky walks around still with carrying the weight of the things he did as the Winter Soldier. And it's always like sad Bucky look on his face. And he's like,
I'm sad Bucky. I'm here to fight.
Sounds like slow Bucky more than sad Bucky.
Yeah. Falcon is a bit more earnest. He's a bit more easier to, follow in a situation because he has still a lot of Steve in him. The reason why Bucky and Falcon were great, especially when it comes to Steve, is you can see that the two of them have such a great relationship with Steve because they're each his best friends. So it's just nice to see that moment. And sure, you can point out that he didn't talk to Bucky, but what is he going to say to Bucky?
Hey, by the way, I just had this amazing life where I got to hang out with the love of my life. You want to hear about it? Because you're my best friend.
Since when do guys talk about stuff they do.
They go watch their whole history. That's why, I get that. It's a moot point. It didn't happen. But I'm just saying.
And who knows? The fact that he talked to Falcon. It could have happened.
No, he talked to Falcon and made a point to tell, you know, going through his long diatribe. But he doesn't say anything other than like a head nod. Hey, what's up, guy? No. Hey, best friend ever that I just spent my entire life and even made a nod to how important you are earlier in the movie. I'm not going to say anything to you about this amazing life I just had. That's just that part. That's the only, it's literally the, my biggest pet peeve, even bigger than Fat Thor, but it's more of, because I love that character so much and I love those movies. Those are my favorite of the Marvel movies. So that was important to me, but beside the point, the funeral, can we talk about the funeral and that freaking hero shot where they go through every single major hero in the MCU, like at the funeral? That was amazing to me. That whole tracking shot where they just weave in and out of all the heroes at the funeral, and even show the kid from Iron Man 3, which if you didn't know, that's who, that one lone kid that nobody knows who it is. That's who that was. That was a beautifully done shot, even though there's a couple people there, you're like, why are they at the funeral? Well, because this is the last we're ever going to get them all together. So here's your one beautiful shot. And I thought it was just fantastically done. And moving. It was very moving to me.
Yeah. Although I was more surprised to see Thunderbolt Ross there.
Yeah. Well, that's the guy. That's the one I was talking about. Like, why would he be there? Because nobody likes him. Get out. we don't like you. But they really made an effort throughout this entire movie to include everyone except Edward Norton, who's ever been involved in an MCU movie, which is fantastic to me. And
Lupita Nyong'o.
Well, I think that's more of a contract thing. She would have been part of it if I'm sure she could have been. But to pay that kind of service to all of your, even characters that have, Jane, Natalie Portman came back and filmed new scenes. All of these actors who came back just to do a quick little nod is just fantastic to me. And it says a lot about the universe they built and the respect they have among the Hollywood community and everything else to even come back and do that. Because Natalie Portman didn't have to do that. Renee Russo, I mean, she's probably free, but none of these people had to. They came back because they either love their characters or they want to pay respect to the final send off. And it was really cool to see that, especially in that moment, they're all collectively together celebrating Tony Stark, who started everything.
Yep. And then you have
Frank Grillo had his moment too.
Yeah. Frank Grillo even came back. Oh, we didn't even talk about Hail Hydra.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So great to get him in that elevator, and he's like, Hail Hydra, and that does happen in the comic book. So that's just a cool nod.
I particularly, at the funeral, my favorite part of it, like aside from, I mean, well, all of it was pretty amazing, but you get to see everybody. You get to see the send-off for Tony with, you know, his... Proof he has his heart. And then you get to see Happy sitting with Morgan, which is Tony Stark's daughter,
the cheeseburger
scene that we talked about already. But it, like, we get to see Nick Fury, and he kind of steps out like, okay, where have you been? And we get these really intimate moments that further that things are going to be okay in some way. Like, that's kind of how it made me feel. It was like, okay, this is really sad, and this is not the most ideal conclusion for everything. You know, we still lost one of our most beloved characters. But we have everybody here together supporting each other, and we have everybody kind of, like, it made you feel like things are going to be okay. It reminded me of when Tony says earlier to his dad, and he's like, everything's going to be okay. And I, like, that's how that moment made me feel.
It's like the most beautiful commercial for future movies they could have made.
Yeah.
Don't worry, guys. We got more stuff.
Peggy Carter, him at Cap having that moment with Peggy, like, that was the most perfect way you could have concluded Captain America's storyline. It was amazing.
Agreed. That was unexpected to me.
I did expect it when he went back to, and he was sitting in her office and he was looking at her. Like, I
well, that's because I was having time travel stuff in my head. And then it happened. I'm like, well, it doesn't make any sense. But you know what? I'm just going to roll with it. Let's just ignore the fact that he's 100 plus years old or whatever. Let's just roll with it. Who cares? I just want to live in that moment.
But
and
the other thing,
they end on that kiss, and it's just like,
the thing that still made me a little bit sad about it is when Cap comes back, he doesn't have Peggy with him, obviously. So he had to, like, go through the whole losing grieving process too.
Well, she still had to die when she died.
Yeah, I know. But I was just like, oh, now he has to experience that, like, on a more intimate level.
She died twice.
Ouch.
Wait, did you not think about that? Like, he's...
No, I didn't, because I'm not evil.
Like, it's beautiful that he got to spend his whole life with her, but now he had to... Like, that makes the grieving even harder, because he spent 70 more years with her or whatever, however long it would have been.
I'm more wondering, so does this mean that you're going to have... You're going to have Thor in Guardians 3, or they're just going to give him a ride to Thor 4?
I hope we have Thor in Guardians 3.
I am going to be mad if we don't, because his As Guardians of the Galaxy thing was the most amazing.
Who's in charge? You are. You are.
His little whisper.
Oh, my God. Like, I do think I really feel like they did it better in the last movie, where they amped up his comedic talents. He's
naturally funny.
He's naturally hilarious, man. And he plays off them. I do think he plays off them great. So even though I don't want another Thor movie, man, Thor to show up in that universe could be great.
Yeah.
It could be great.
I'm for that.
Those movies are more about that. Like, that makes more sense to me to make them just freaking ridiculous. Just go out there. Thor. You're so cute sometimes. So Hawkeye got his family back too. That was very sweet. Very sweet moment.
It was sweet at the expense of Black Widow.
She sacrificed herself.
It was still sweet.
Yeah.
It was still sweet. I'm just saying, sadness.
I still want to, like, the spinoff is bugging me. Like, is it going to be in the previous 5 years? Is it going to be a prequel? What are we doing here? Are they going to find a way to bring it back?
It's going to be the Budapest story.
Well, I mean, you're going to be hard pressed. Well, I guess he can just de-age Renner, so he looks less like Grumpy Cat. I guess it's possible.
He always looked like Grumpy Cat.
He did.
That's true. All right. So that's anything more on the ending of the story there. I guess we could mention there is no after credit stinger, but there is a clang where you basically him making the Iron Man suit. Yeah. So I don't know if that's just a nod to how it all started, or Iron Man will continue with another character. I don't know. But you guys have an opinion?
Well, I'm hoping that it means that we're going to have more rescue, which I didn't think I needed or necessarily wanted, but I'm hoping that means that she'll still be involved in some way.
I think she's done. She said this is her last Marvel movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess it's just from the beginning then. This is the book ending of Iron Man, where it started from him and now it's ending with him.
I don't know if we need another Iron Man specific character, like. In the comics, Iron Man went from being Iron Man to then we had Iron Heart, which was a girl had taken up the mantle of Iron Man. But I don't think it's necessary. And there are so many more characters to be playing with in the upcoming years that we can just leave that character alone.
I would like
and
the
find
A-Force,
a different way to shuttle.
So I disagree. Because having a movie with Valkyrie and having She-Hulk and having Captain Marvel and having Rescue all together. And there's another character that I can't remember the name of.
You just do it without Rescue.
Dazzler and Medusa.
That's what I was thinking of.
It's Medusa, Dazzler, She-Hulk, Valkyrie, and Captain Marvel. And Miko, who's a witch. And then there's Singularity, who's like a walking void, a space void. So
your head has
those
so
are the starting
damage.
Characters of A-Force.
That's something that I would be eager to check out. And I agree that I don't need more Iron Man necessarily, but I would like to see that happen.
All right, so who's your endgame MVP? Like, who is the character, one character, that had your favorite character arc for the entire movie?
It has to go to Iron Man for me. Like, as much as I went into it thinking it was going to be Captain America or even Scarlet Witch, because, like, I really do love her, it was him. He's not here anymore because he sacrificed everything. His family, his daughter, his happiness. He gave up everything. And watching his arc progress, not through just all of these movies, but simply even in just this movie, was enough for me to be like, you deserve it. Not just because he died, but because of everything that changed in him.
But because of how he lived.
Oh, that's sweet. I should have said that.
I'll second Tony Stark. I mean, she's already said most of it. I just feel like he finally became, to me, less of a caricature and more of an actual hero.
Yeah.
I've never loved that character, but I loved him in this movie.
I'm going with Cap because he still maintained being the heart of this whole universe throughout this movie, even though we watched him in dark moments and light moments, he was still everything that I needed out of Captain America.
Dude, he was running group therapy sessions to help like regular civilians after this.
Because he's Captain America.
It's so sweet.
And he has America's ass.
He does have America's ass.
All right. So the end game surprise player, you know, the player that surprised you the most or won you over as a fan. I'm saying Black Widow because I did not really care much about Black Widow until this movie. In any of the previous movies, she never did anything for me. Scarlett Johansson never really impressed me with the character. She never really left much of a statement in terms of, yeah, she needs a spinoff. I know a lot of other fans thought she deserved a spinoff. I'm like, why? I just don't find the character that exciting. And she'd only work if she has a bunch of secondary characters helping her out. It's just not a character I really, really loved. But here, she has several moments, not the least of which is the beginning where she's just kind of having a breakdown as she tries to process and still maintain some control over the Avengers Initiative. And also hears about Clint and everything else. And she's just so emotional but powerful in that scene. And then the scene with her and Jeremy Renner where they're bouncing off the cliff for the sacrifice. Those two specific moments created a character that I haven't seen in the previous movies, and she completely won me over. Like, okay, now I'll see your spinoff. Like, you finally won me over to where I need to see more Black Widow. At the end, you finally won me over.
My surprise player is Ant-Man. As much as we had so many characters that were great and powerful that meant so much to us, Ant-Man mixing with this group of people who technically he doesn't fit because he didn't start this whole thing off like everybody else did. He was able to stand in and stand toe-to-toe with these heavy hitters of characters, and I can't wait to see more Ant-Man moving forward.
Can we just agree? He basically saved the planet.
He did.
He did.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't for Ant-Man, everybody's still dead.
There's a lot of characters at play here where if they wouldn't have done their part in it, nothing would have ever worked.
True, but Tony Stark's getting all the credit, and I'm like, hey, you didn't even have this idea, mister. You need to go pay some respect to Ant-Man.
He does.
Who is a huge Captain America fan.
Mine went to Pepper Potts because I've never
really
I've never cared about her character. Even with Tony, I've always just been like, I could do without, I don't really need her here, never been interested. But seeing her in action and seeing her very sweet moment with Tony where she's like, you can rest now, oh my god.
Yeah, that was a very sweet moment.
But when she, even when she takes care of Spidey, like, she's in it, she's involved. She didn't have to be doing any of this. Like, realistically, she could have just said, I've got a daughter I should probably worry about.
Yeah, somebody should be watching this kid. Apparently Happy's taking care of this kid the whole time during the battle.
But she could have been just trying to protect her family, and instead she was out on the front line saving Spider-Man's ass, just doing everything that she needed to do and being there in the final moments. And the thing that like impressed me the most about her character, not as a superhero but just as Pepper Potts, was when she was sitting with Tony, she doesn't cry while he has his eyes open. She doesn't make the moment about her grief watching her husband die. She makes the moment about like, you did everything you could. Like, you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to be okay. Like, we're going to be okay.
You can rest. Yeah.
And then she breaks down after he's gone.
That's very beautiful. All right. Your top three overall favorite moments or lines from Endgame. John, what are your top three?
My number one moment is Cap picking up the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
My number two moment is you get the little one, I get the big one. I don't know why that just sticks out in my head and be
with the hammers.
The hammer, yeah, and the axe.
Okay.
And then my number three moment is, damn right, that's America's ass.
That's fair. Amanda?
My number three is the Morgan and the shit scene. Like, it cracks me up when Tony Stark is sitting there. He's like, shit. And she's like, shit, shit.
No, stop, shit.
And then she manipulates him into getting her little lollipop.
Yeah.
And that leads into the 3000 scene.
I love you, 3000.
Oh my gosh. The whole thing was just beautiful.
Can we just point out, you got us with more tears in your video diary again? You son of a bitch, man. I was just done crying over him dying. And he's like, I love you, 3000. You son of a bitch. Stop it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the whole last, like, probably 25 to 30 minutes is just straight sobbing.
Well, apparently not at John's house, but everywhere else.
No.
My number two moment, and this is, I'm telling you, I love this girl.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda coming in with her witchy witchiness. And she's attacking Thanos, and she's like, you took everything from me. And just seeing her so powerful, where she's literally crumbling the armor from Thanos's chest. Like, that whole moment was so powerful to me. And to see her come back like, you did take everything from me, and I'm going to make you pay for it. And she's pretty much said that since it happened. Like, I'm not going to let you just rest and deal with, you're going to get my consequences.
And then he cheats.
Yeah, in fairness, it was Wanda that caused him to do the try to obliterate everyone with the rockets from the ship. Like, he was having his mm-hmm. ass handed to him, and all of a sudden, like, the only way he can get out of it was to try to kill everything and everyone in the path. That was it.
Including all of his people. He's like, I don't even care. Mm-hmm. You better protect me because I'm about to die.
So if anybody died at that point, that's on Wanda. We're just going to put it on her head. Nice job. What a witch.
But my number one moment.
Shut up. That was good.
My number one moment, and I'm not choosing the moment where Cap actually grabs the hammer. I'm choosing the moment where he's holding the hammer and he says, Avengers, assemble. Mm. Because I got to see everybody lined up. I, like, legit lost my shit when he said, Avengers, assemble. And it's, like, weird because it probably would normally be very cheesy to hear that line, but he delivered it so perfect that I was like, aw, shit, it's about to go down! And yeah. I was, like, here for it. I loved it.
Aw.
What about yours?
My number three is Cap and Peggy's kiss, because I've been waiting for them to get back together the entirety of this whole story. That's like the one sad thing that never was going to happen, and they found a way to make it happen. I don't even care if time travel doesn't make sense. I don't care, because they got that kiss, and it just made me happy. Number two is Tony Stark's sacrifice. And if you know anything about me, you know I don't really like Tony Stark. I've never been that attached to his character. I don't think the Iron Man movies are that great. They're fine. I love the first one. After that, it was just okay. Didn't like Iron Man 3 that much. And, you know, I felt like they overused him throughout the series repeatedly. Mm-hmm. He's in everything. He's always going to be part of everything. And he just got old. But here, I feel like they actually let him be a fully fledged character, not a caricature. And his entire arc just really, really moved me. And damn it, they earned my tears. And number one is Cap getting the hammer. Like, seriously, I'm not kidding. I almost stood up and applauded both times I saw it. it's a moment to me that I've been wanting to see in any of these movies. And it finally happened. And I just lost my mind. So it was fantastic. And
I love that it didn't come out of nowhere, too, because we, as John already talked about, it was alluded to.
Yeah.
So this, it was something where you could believe that it was not just fan service for the final movie.
Right. And, you know, I will say, I think we can collectively agree, there are great moments throughout the entire movie. There's so many. I mean, we could just go on and on and on.
It was hard to choose.
And it feels like they just have done a masterful job here for the most part. Where do you want to see the MCU go next? Any wishes or hopes for future team-ups or anything?
I'm kind of okay with letting this die down a little bit. We've had 11 years, 22 movies. I think I'm okay with letting this just settle a little bit. Obviously, one thing I think is going to be great, especially for Aaron here, is Spider-Man. He's, sad as it is, he's not going to be Tony Stark's apprentice in the movie.
Thank you, God.
He's going to be very much so Spider-Man and just being Spider-Man. He's gonna be matured and fleshed out as a character much more, where before we have relied on him being Tony Stark's sidekick. And I think that seeing Tony Stark die will actually mature him, make him a much more intriguing character as a solo character.
Oh, because what'll make me feel great is if he reflects often on his passing as opposed to Uncle Ben's passing.
Okay, well, not that
now
part.
Now you just made me not want to see Far
From
Home.
Sorry, no, ignore that I said that part. Just go back
Son
to the part where Tony Stark isn't in the movie.
Son of a bitch. John, what do you want to see from the MCU going forward? Anything?
I don't know. There are so many other characters that can start pulling out of the woodwork that would work, but at the same time, I don't know where they go from here. I don't know how they keep the same sort of heart. I don't know how they keep the same sort of energy. I don't know how they do it. I'm interested to see how or if they can, but I just don't know. There's too much to go off of to really come up with something. If they didn't make another MCU movie after this point, which we know they're going to, that would be okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of one of those things where I consider it a reset. I know they're saying that Far From Home was the final movie in this phase, but Endgame is the final movie. Mm-hmm. Like, if you never had another movie, I feel like, bam, you guys nailed it, knocked it out of the park. It's all trying to get back to uphill from here, because you're kind of starting over in a lot of respects. They've got a lot of wins. They've got Black Panther and Captain Marvel are huge box office hits, so it's not like they're going to be struggling.
You know what? Now that I think about it, I would like to see them develop a different kind of like ending. So versus they're dealing with one big bad that's taken down the world, at the end of whatever chain they're going to do next, it's all the big bads from all the movies they do forward come together. And it's like, you know, Avengers versus anti-Avengers kind of thing.
Oh, it's like Justice League versus Justice League Dark or something.
Or no, Justice League, like kind of like Justice League versus the League of
Doom. Is it League of Doom? No,
League of Doom. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So kind of like that verse, instead of seeing one big bad that's doing everything, you have characters, and it would be really cool to see them kind of mix and match who's fighting who. So instead of, and so you'll have a character who's fighting some of Black Panther's villains, it'll be Spider-Man fighting Black Panther's villains and vice versa, and seeing how the mixing and matching works. So building up the villain thing, which is something you've always had a complaint about, so build up the villains so that they're strong characters just as well as heroes are, would be a nice way to see them do something at the end.
But I will say, Thanos, I mean, probably haven't talked much about him. I do respect what they've done with Thanos. Josh Brolin has done a masterful job of bringing that character to life and making it one of, if not the best villain in comic book movies. So that was pretty impressive. And Nebula probably should get a shout out too, because that was a pretty fully fledged character this time around. I know a lot of people that didn't like her until this movie, which is funny.
I wasn't anti her. I just was like, meh, kind of like Black Widow, meh.
Yeah, a whole lot of meh, meh. I want to see Black Panther and Deadpool. I don't know why.
More Black Panther in general would be great.
Well, we're going to get that. He's going to probably show up everywhere, but basically, I want Deadpool to start popping up in all of these movies. It's time. Let me just, instead of Stan Lee cameos, I want Deadpool cameos. Instead of... I just want Deadpool all over the place.
Did anyone feel like they were missing a little bit more of like a tribute to Stan Lee at the end of the movie or at the beginning of the movie or something? Like, I know that they had, you know, they did.
Enough said and his cameo.
But
make love, not war, man.
That was really great. But I still feel like they should have done something like even in memory of Stan Lee, or thank you for all of your service, Stan Lee, or something.
Probably, but. They did that with Captain Marvel, so it's not like they didn't do it.
I know. It's just this is the conclusion of his work.
I get that. That makes sense.
That's the only thing.
We don't know. Like, see, I personally am really hoping in the future you still see like a picture of Stan Lee, or you see a name, or you see Enough Said, or great. An Excelsior, or something along those lines. Just little nods to him instead of cameos. You still get respect to Stan. I think that would be great.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about this. There's no stinger, but... those credits, the signature credits for the main Avengers at the very end, that was kind of cool.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was a really cool little touch.
I always love it when they do that.
Except why is Mark Ruffalo after Chris Hemsworth? I don't understand that, because Hemsworth had his own solo movies. He should be more important than Mark Ruffalo. That's what I'm saying. I think maybe there should be a grievance with the guild. I don't know.
Okay.
All right, it's all over. Last words on Avengers Endgame, as well as your score of $10 is the full price of admission. John, last words and your score.
I absolutely love this movie. I can't wait to sit down and watch it again. I don't know if I'm going to go to the theater again or wait till I can, you know, freely go to the bathroom when I need to go to the bathroom and watch it at home. It was a great time, and I especially can't wait to watch this back to back with Infinity War. $8.50.
Despite any issues that I had with it, I still loved this movie. $3,009.
Aw, that's sweet. I've seen the movie in 3D, and I will tell you, you don't need to.
Nope.
It's fine, but it's not necessarily worth the extra charge. The movie's great. It really brings it all together. The pacing struggles a little bit in the first hour, but after that, it's fine. It didn't like Fat Thor, but everything else works. If $10 full price permission, I give it $9. Boom. That's it. We're done, people. Biggest movie of the year is done. Well, possibly biggest movie of the year. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's going to make like $1 billion worldwide by the time you hear this. And it's over $300 million easy for the domestic opening weekend, which is insane.
The opening night alone was like
$150 million.
Insane, yeah.
It's just...
Breaking records left and right.
I don't even understand. I don't even understand. So much money. Where does it go?
They just paid for Hulu.
Yeah, Disney's like, the check clear yet? All right, let's buy Hulu. We're getting Comcast share. We're all good. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. You can comment on this in our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. And we're going to give you a little bit of something something after we're done here. You're going to get to hear our predictions before the movie. So what you're going to hear at the end of this podcast is actually how we predicted everything would happen. So it's kind of a self-reflection. How close were we? Interesting stuff.
Very far off.
Yes, quite a bit. So go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's our website. You can subscribe on whatever app you use, including Spotify. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohndraws, Amanda on Smirk and Veronica's Marshmallows, and me on my other podcast, Smirk and the Blacklist Exposed. Remember, the next time you head to the theater to see Avengers Endgame again, buy popcorn. Now, here are our predictions for a movie that already happened. This is the Avengers predictions. We're actually recording this before we see Avengers to kind of see where everybody lands. And this is going to be part of our spoiler cast. So you'll be able to know how right or wrong we are. We're going to predict who's going to live and die from Avengers Endgame. Ready?
Yeah.
So here's what we're going to do. I am just going to name the characters and we're going to go round robin and you say live or die. Ready?
Okay. What if I want to say alive or dead?
Amanda?
Okay, never mind. Follow your rules.
Lady, it's been a long night.
I know.
Here we go. Here's our original Avengers. This is who we're concerned with. The main Avengers team, the original, the OG, or O-A-G. Iron Man, what's your prediction? Alive or dead?
Dead.
Alive.
I say alive. Anything added to that? I'm saying alive. Oh, marries Pepper Potts as a child.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly where I'm going to go, is that he gets to have his happy ending and become the parent he always wanted to be.
You already called dead.
I know. Now I'm regretting that.
And can I ask, are we just ignoring the entire plot point where Pepper Potts was like a fireball? Is that just ignored now?
No, they cured her.
When did that happen?
In the same movie.
At the end of that Iron Man movie?
I don't think they did, John.
No, they did.
I think they did.
Okay.
Google it.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough. Good call.
Wow.
All right, Cap.
Touche.
Captain America.
Thank you, Johnny. I'm going to say dead.
I'm going dead.
I'm going dead, too. If anybody gets an honorable death, it's Cap.
Yes, exactly.
Thor.
Wait, we don't have Loki on here.
No, we're just doing the Avengers. Oh, he was a bad guy.
Yeah.
Today, Junior.
Dead. Well, you could have gone too.
You were the one hemming and hawing. I can't like talk with you while you're hemming and hawing.
Yeah, let me get that. What'd you say, alive or dead? I can't remember now.
I think I said dead.
Dead. All right, John.
Thor's alive.
I say alive.
He's probably going to live.
Oh, well, too late. You said dead.
I know.
Hulk.
Alive.
Alive.
I say dead.
Aww. Hulk smash, and then he dies. Like, that might make me cry.
I think so. Black Widow.
Lives.
With a spinoff coming.
Yeah.
John?
Definitely lives. I mean, you already answered for me.
Yeah, could be a prequel. We don't know.
It's not.
Maybe. Actually, good point. It could be a prequel. Still lives. although, like, lately everyone's been making a whole lot of jokes about all the Avengers do their power-ups, and then she's just loading up guns.
Yeah, she lives. How about Hawkeye?
Lives.
Oh, my goodness.
I say dies. And I know he has a TV show coming, and I'm still saying dies.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he lives, because doesn't he have something more coming? So I'm going to say lives.
All right. And lastly, Nick Fury.
Dies.
We already know he's alive.
Oh, he's in Far From Home.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
you said dies. Lives.
That's not fair.
Amanda starts this wrong. So wrong.
You guys don't get to cheat and exclude me.
That's
from
not cheating. You had the
cheating.
Same information we
no,
had.
No, I didn't. Not when I answered. I'm changing my answer.
Nope.
Yes.
Nope. You had the exact
no,
same
I
information.
Didn't.
Because when I talked about Spider-Man Far From Home, I was like, hey, all this shit is spoilers. And you're like, what did John say? Because nobody listens to me.
I did listen to you. I'm saying that he's going to
These are
live.
Our predictions. Bye.
You guys are such assholes.